nobleman that Al just read the event of there in the fourth chapter of John, you could take him from the first century, that time in which he was living then, and you could transport him here to the 21st century. And there'd be a few changes. It'd probably get him a cell phone and a computer, probably a car or, an SUV or something like that, maybe flying a plane, get to some places quicker. He had a pretty good walk, or if he rode a donkey or mule or something like that, from Capernaum up to Cana, he probably could drive a car today, and such as that. But those would be about the only differences. As far as the individual, as far as the man, he very possibly would be successful today. He very possibly would have a good position, maybe an honorable position like he had there in the first century. But he could also have sick children. He could have a sick son. He could be concerned. He could worry. He could have frustrations. He could have neighbors that maybe, upset him. He could have bosses. Maybe the king now wouldn't treat him as well as he did then. He could have a lot of concerns that we have today. The point is, of course, is that, really there's not that much difference, is there? I mean, the differences are just in the technologies of the time and not in the people. So I'd like for us to consider this individual this morning, for us to think about far as some things regarding ourselves. But first we need to see his position and understand him, and then we can put ourselves then in that, hopefully. So we look at this individual, this nobleman, and he has a son that is sick unto death. We notice here in verse 46 that there was a certain nobleman whose son was sick. And he had come and he had asked Jesus to heal his son, for he was at the point of death. So he's not only sick, but he's very sick. He is at the point of death. In fact, he's so concerned, he says, "You need to come because my child will die. Ere my child will die if you do not come." And so we find the son was very ill, just as, children can get very ill today. In fact, we can look here and it says, talking about his healing, that the fever left him. And so he apparently had some fever-producing illness that was at the point of ending his life. And that would be very scary for a parent, for your child to be burning up, in fever, and knowing that, they're not going to be able to survive this for very long. Some other things that I'd like for us to consider, as we notice from that reading, that this is the second sign that Jesus did in Cana of Galilee. Now we notice here, he says in verse 46, that he here, of course, is Jesus. He came therefore again unto Cana of Galilee, where there was where he made the water wine. And we get down to the 54th verse, and he says, this is again the second sign that Jesus did, having come out of Cana of Galilee. Now, you might recall, if we go back to the second chapter, that event, back to John chapter 2, that is recorded, a couple of verses to remind us of that. Verse 9 says, and when the ruler of the feast, the taste of the water now become wine, he knew not whence it was, but the servants that had drawn the water knew. The ruler of the feast called the bridegroom. And, remember how he said, you've kept on. Okay, and then verse 11 says, this is the beginning of his signs. This beginning of his signs did Jesus in Cana of Galilee, and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed on him. So we find here this is the second sign. Now the first sign, of course, is that of changing water into wine. But really, that's not any big deal. That happens all the time. We got big vineyards doing that, all over this state, don't we? Water's absorbed from the ground by the grapevine, and it will produce then fruit for the making of the wine, won't it? Still does so today. It did so then. Once again, 2,000 years, not a lot of differences in that. Not outstanding in this miracle, is it? Because that's nature, that's natural. But how long does it take that process? Well, once you even have the vine, and you've got to have it for about 3 years before you're able to really produce anything, begin to produce anything off of it. But from the production of the grapes, just starting the grape, to the time that you can actually then squeeze the grape for the juice and then, store it and put it into the process there of the fruit of the vine, is about 60 days. And so Jesus said, just wait 60 days and you'll have some more wine here for the feast. But we know that, Jesus then, He caused that water to become wine immediately. I mean, it happened right there at that occasion during that feast. And so we find that this sign is not only showing Jesus' power over nature, but it shows Jesus' power over nature's use of time. Now, this is just a little bit of plug from last week, because we talked about, kind of like our theme for this year will be some things about time. And we saw in His time, in God's time. And a lot of times, we think about in God's time as, 1,000 years as being just one day. And so we go, a whole 1,000 years. But what about 60 days being compressed into just a few moments? And so you see, Jesus' miracle was not only a miracle or a power over that production of immediately or of just taking, water without the grapevine and without the fruit itself, without the grape itself, and instantly making it wine, but we see that His power over time. So time, doesn't necessarily mean anything to God, as we know. So what is that to God? And so it's nothing. So God could turn that water into wine immediately. Now this second miracle that we're about ready to see, or that we read about, that Al read for us, that also can have people aiding in healing. I mean, we have doctors today, don't we? We have a lot of things that cause fevers that people still die from, but we also have a lot of things that cause fevers that we have medicines for and treatment for, and science has, come up with a specific cures for and vaccinations for and all those kinds of things. So you see, we have doctors, we have nurses, we have caregivers that aid in the healing of someone. Now, most of Jesus' healing works demonstrated the same as the wine in regard to how long does it take. And so healing, often takes some time. And of course, Jesus did this instantaneously. We'll see here in just a moment. But this miracle is shown to be worked by Jesus, not only because of the timing, but the sign in this miracle is its space or its distance. You come and you be here. You can lay your hands. You can heal my child. We want the doctor to come. We want the doctor to see. We want the doctor to diagnose, don't we? But Jesus didn't have to go there, did He? Not only to see and to diagnose, and most certainly not even to heal. So time and space mean nothing to God. Just kind of keep these things in mind. And so we find that the sign in this miracle is its space or its distance. You want to notice then this certain nobleman. So he says, a certain nobleman. A nobleman is just a person in some capacity by birth or appointment that is an officer of the court of a king. So he is, says there, an officer of the King Herod, the Tetrarch. Now, you might remember over in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and 26 says, not many mighty and not many noble. And what is this man? A nobleman. But not many mighty and not many noble, come to believing. 1 Corinthians 1 and 26 says, but this man does. In fact, we notice here this nobleman's faith. We notice in verse 41 he is a nobleman. And we'll see that again, or you can see it again, but we just have it here. And it says, the man believed the word. And then it says down here, he himself believed. And so this nobleman is a man of faith. He's a man that believes. He is a man that has, you know, enough faith. That is, you know, faith enough. We see here that he comes to seek Jesus out. Verse 47, when he heard that Jesus was come out of Judea into Galilee, he went up unto him and besought him that he would come down and heal his son. We notice, though, that he knows this and he understands this because the Galileans, of which Capernaum is a part of, as well as Cana, even though they are 20-some miles apart, the Galileans received him, speaking of Jesus, having seen all the things that he did in Jerusalem at the feast, for they also went unto the feast. Now, back in the second chapter, the 23rd verse, he's talking about that feast. That's where Jesus went after the, producing of the wine from water. It says, now, when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover during the feast, many believed on his name, beholding his signs, which he did. And so, this nobleman, he comes seeking Jesus. He comes looking for Jesus. Why does he come? Because he believes. He believes something anyway. He's heard maybe stories. He's heard rumors about, you know, this man has been to Jerusalem and a lot of people were there. And they witnessed great miracles, great powers that he had done. And so we find that this certain nobleman did believe. And so as he believed, we noted there that in verse 49 and verse 50, the latter part of 49 says, sir, come down ere my child die, lest my child die. And Jesus said unto him, go thy way, thy son lives. And so the man believed then, didn't he? He says he believed the word that Jesus spake unto him, and he went his way. All right, so I've got a slide out of order, and or at least got maybe taken out. I'm not sure. So I'll just tell you this portion. You're going to have to kind of go along with me on this. But here he comes seeking Jesus. It says he believes, but you know, does he have faith enough? Well, he has enough faith in the sense that he has come there, hasn't he? He has heard that Jesus did signs, that Jesus did miracles while he was at Jerusalem. And we look at that and we go, well, that's just a man that's desperate. That's a man in desperation. And it probably is. We find a faith of desperation. Does faith never come from desperation? Do we never have our own desperation? We find that it very well may be. But you see, Jesus came in order for people to see that they are in desperate need of God. Not everyone sees that, but we are. We are in desperate need of God. This man is in desperate need, yes, and that's why he's seeking out Jesus. But that's why Jesus came, is so we could see. We have desperate needs that only God can satisfy, that only God can heal, only God can help with. We find that this desperation often causes people to seek out, you know, all kinds of avenue of remedy. Have you never tried to figure out how to do something, how to accomplish something, how to get something, how to do, you know, how to get better? You know, you get sick and you go, have you not watched any videos on treatments for COVID? Have you not learned about any vitamins that might actually help and might even prevent, you know, you from being able to, you know, be very sick with it if you do get it, you know, type of thing? How do you know that? Because you had an interest in it, because you don't want it, because you don't want to get that sick. You don't want to be on a respirator. You don't want to be, you know, in the hospital, right? Well, see, Jesus came for desperate people. But in his desperation, he still has to have some confidence, some trust, some belief that this might help. And so we find that he believed, and he then, in his faith, asked his servants when they come unto him, when they meet him as he's going on. So he inquired of them the hour when he began to amend. The hour when he began to amend. And they said unto him, yesterday at the seventh hour the fever left him. Now notice there, what's he looking at? Well, he's looking at kind of like we look at things. Well, people, you start taking your medicine, and what happens? You take your vitamin, you take your pill, you know, you take your, you know, cold treatment, you take your Formula 44, and it's just done with? No. But you start a process, right, of healing. And so that's kind of what this nobleman is thinking. He's thinking, well, when did he start getting better? They go, no, you have to understand. He didn't just start getting better. The fever left him. It's gone. It's taken care of. And Jesus didn't even go down there, as we notice there. And so it didn't just begin, but the very hour the fever totally left him. So neither time nor space is needed for a miracle, right? We notice then that now the Father knows something. Now the Father knew. Well, what is it that He knew? Well, it says the Father knew there in verse 33 that it was that hour in which Jesus said unto Him, thy son lives. He said, so when did that happen? They said the seventh hour. And He knew. He says, well, that's back when Jesus told me that my son is living. And at that moment then, the fever left him. And we notice then that he himself believed in his whole house. Now the nobleman knew, you see. He knew because that's when the hour happened. Now I realize that it just says he knew that when the hour had happened. But he says, and he believed at that moment. Well, didn't he believe, you know, earlier? Well, yes. But he believed now. At that moment, and the fever had just totally left him. But the nobleman's family is just going to have to take his word for it, you see. Now his family comes to believe, but they're going to have to believe because he said so. So we see that the nobleman's faith now has grown not only in personal confidence, but enough to risk a public confession of what he believes. And so now his whole family believes. The servants would probably be a part of that family that he spoke about there. All right, so, hold on. It's time to get our Bibles out. We're going to now be looking at our Bibles. I've done giving you all the freebies I'm going to give you. And been putting it up there for you, okay? But now we open our Bibles and we want to notice the practical side for us. Jesus worked with the nobleman in a manner in which he did. Just like he did with a lot of the people that he healed, a lot of the people he had that interaction with, a lot of people that came to him looking for a miracle, and even those that were not looking for a miracle, he just says, would you like to have your eyesight? Or he doesn't even say that. He says, you know, if you'd like to see, do this. And they begin to do it. Jesus does this in order to grow a person's faith. And he's working with this man to grow his faith. Maybe it's just out of desperation. Maybe he's just come and he's going, I don't know why I'm doing this. This is foolish. I've got to take off, you know, 2 or 3 days from court and from being in the king's court, you know, being there at his service. I've got to do this travel. I've got to go up there and I've got to inquire and find out where this Jesus is. I don't know. Okay, but yeah, I'm desperate. My son needs this. I've heard that Jesus has been doing this healing, you see. And so, okay, yeah, he'll go do this. Maybe it's just a mustard seed faith that he has when he goes there. Notice verse 48 as you have your Bibles open there of chapter 4. And it says, Jesus therefore said unto him, except ye see signs and wonders, you shall in no wise believe. Wow. In some ways that's kind of harsh. But I'd like for you to notice that Jesus speaks to him directly, says to him, but he also then says to everyone. Because There are probably others standing around. When he says ye, that's just old English for, you know, plural, you know, for more than one ye's, more than one thou, or more than one you. And so, but ye. And you go back to the original language, you find that that's third person plural. And so Jesus is speaking to him, says this to him, but he says this to everyone that's there. And what does he say? He says, so, you know, unless you see a sign and wonders, you will in no wise believe. So, time and space mean nothing to Jesus, right? So we're now 2,000 years removed. Jesus is no longer physically for our benefit as far as being able to see in our presence like he was for that individual. But just as he was not present with that individual's son, and just as it happened instantaneously, just as it happened immediately, and just as it happened through a distance of 20-some miles and a day's journey, you know, to make that trip, we find that Jesus healed him. So now here we are. We're 2,000 years removed, right? And Jesus is in heaven. I mean, that's a little more than 20 miles. And so, as we think of it, it may not be. It just may be a fabric, you know. God could just step through, you know, a dimension and be right here. He's right here anyway. And so, but anyway, point is that, you know, time and space doesn't mean anything to him. So what does it mean to us 2,000 years later? Time and space mean a lot to us, doesn't it? But it doesn't to God. So do you have to see it in order to believe? That's what Jesus asked them. It is the mustard seed principle, you know, back there in Luke 17 and 8, like when he said, if you have faith, even as a grain of mustard seed, you know, this little bitty thing, the smallest of seeds, you could say unto the sycamine tree, be plucked up and go over there in the ocean and grow. Plant it over there in the sea. And he says, and it would obey you with just that little faith. It's just that little bit of faith. And so Jesus talks about that. You know, we understand that. The mustard seed principle. And so we see here the Father didn't bristle in pride at Jesus' answer. Except you see signs. Well, I just want you to know it. It has nothing to do with me, believe it or not. I'm just come because I want my son better. You're going to act like that? Just forget it. I just go on my way. You know. Maybe I can have more children or something. I don't know. You know. But he doesn't do that, does he? He doesn't bristle and throw up his pride and refuse to pursue this any further. We find, what does he do? He comes back with an even stronger argument. The nobleman said unto him, sir, come down ere my child die. He comes now pleading. And so, you see, his faith is growing like a mustard seed in order to accomplish what he desires of Jesus, what he believes that Jesus could do. And then, verse 50 says, the man believed the word that Jesus spake and went on his way. Al, you did an excellent job this morning on the song choices. Would you do me a favor and would you open up to that first song that you led? I can't remember the number of it, and that's why I need to call upon you to do it. Okay. Now, would you read just the first, you know, stanza there? You don't have to read the chorus, but just that the first line of those two measures. Stand up and read those to us, if you would, please.
'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus, Jesus to take Him at His word, just to rest upon His promise, just to know, thus saith the Lord.
Thank you. Wasn't that excellent? Now see, you just sang that. We just sang that. I sang it too. Not well, but I sang it. Some people question whether it was singing or not even. But nonetheless, you know, I spoke the words. Here we are 2,000 years ago. We're speaking just what that man spoke in a sense. 'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus, just to take Him at His word. What does it say here? Verse 50. The man believed the word that Jesus spake, just to trust His promises, just to know. And so the man then went his way. You see, he trusted. All the other songs were good too, Al, but I just was thinking about that verse. So growth of faith results in enthusiasm for those who believe. It begins without a desperation. It comes with a challenge. Except you see, will you not believe? Please, my son is dying. Okay, just go your way, your son as well. Okay. And then, when did he start to get better? The seventh hour. Ah, that's when Jesus said that to me. And he tells his whole family now. You see, he confesses his faith. He confesses his belief. He confesses his trust in the Lord. You see, faith is growing. And faith grows to an enthusiasm. An enthusiasm for what? To tell others. Because of what you've experienced, what you now, you know, have partaken in, what you now see in your faith. And so growth of faith results in this enthusiasm. Or will it be as Jesus, for except you believe? Will we 2,000 years later take note of the signs? Will we, like the man's family, trust the witnesses that have seen and have beheld? Some are still only looking for a miracle. Well, I prayed, and yeah, here, nothing happened, you know. Okay? Still looking, except you see, will you not believe? But for those who have seen, those that bear testimony, those that witness, why do they do so? Because they have come to believe and they are enthused in their faith. And now they want others to know. And so that's why we have this book. Even at the risk of their lives, and many of them died that are the authors of these books that we read. All of them died, but I mean, died a martyr's death. Died sooner than they should have. Died because someone killed them for telling others about what they believe. You see? Trials, unexpected fears, all of these things, they can prompt us to seek out means that will either lead us to greater faith or disappoint us to the point of faithless failures. Look at this man. What did it do? It led him to greater faith. The rich young ruler, what did it do? Caused him to walk away sad, disappointed. All right? So it can work either way for us. What will we do with it? It's 2,000 years old, I know. In some way, the personal crisis of each believer has brought us to Jesus. Whether it's our sin with guilt and shame and fear for the loss of eternity. No, I want to live forever. I don't want to lose heaven. Or our crisis of wandering in a meaningless life. What does life mean anyway? I'm just tired of it. It's just hard. Is this what we got to do all the time? Maybe it's just some other peculiar, different, specific personal need that maybe not many other people share and aren't even able, you know, to really comprehend. But you see, something like that brought us to Jesus. And so now what do we do once we come to Jesus, once we examine the evidence? How will we believe? Will it continue to grow? Will it continue to mature till to the point that it becomes enthusiastic? You see, Jesus performed these miracles to be signs that would lead people to believe in who He is and His purpose for coming. John writes that Jesus' miracles as signs that signify and magnify a point that is even greater than the miracle itself. Whoa, think about that. that is even greater than the miracle itself? So let's go see the Grand Canyon. We all hop in our cars. We maybe get on a bus together or something. We go driving up there about 10 miles outside of Grand Canyon. You see a sign, Grand Canyon. Well, we've seen the Grand Canyon. Let's go home. Well, you've seen a sign. It's not the Grand Canyon, is it? It's the sign regarding the Grand Canyon. You see, the miracles are like that. They're like that sign. Oh, I know they're spectacular signs. I mean, they're wonderful signs. Not like that little piece of metal sitting there with some paint on it, you know, just telling you that it's ahead. But how great the miracles are. What they were signifying is even greater. Wow. Could that be? Well, that's the way it is with signs now, isn't it? Beach that way. Well, I've seen the beach. No, you saw the sign. What are you missing if you don't go past the sign? You're missing a lot, aren't you? You're missing out on the greatest thing. So people still get so focused on the needs of the flesh, but that's not why Jesus came. Jesus used the flesh to signify, to signify something even greater that He's come to give unto us, to offer unto us. We find that Jesus relieved many people of their fleshly malices. But many more would still live without healing. A lot of people were not healed in the day that Jesus was there, the time that Jesus lived. And right there, He was right there. And think of the number of people who maybe remained blind, that remained deaf, that died of some sickness. And Jesus was right there. But even those that were healed, they might later get sick again. They will definitely later die, won't they? Even though He healed them. You see, Jesus came for something better, bigger, even than that, did He not? So if Jesus did have power over time and space, and He used these to guide us to see, you know, the terminal outcome of our sin, to show us, but you see what happened? Go and sin no more. Let's say, worst thing befall thee. Blindness is pretty bad. I don't want to be blind. I don't know about you. I guess I could survive. I could live with it, but I don't want to be. That's pretty bad. But there's something worse. And so you see, Jesus is showing us something worse and something greater. So, what has He come to show us? Our need for God and an understanding of our purpose for existing. Still the same as it was then, isn't it? Will we then grow in faith enough to see our own need? To see that, yes, we do have a need too. Everyone does. From kings to presidents to great celebrities to fantastic athletes to geniuses to whatever on. All have this need if we see it. All are desperate if we understand where we stand. Okay. It begins with enough faith to obey the gospel. This is where we all start. Jesus said, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are weary laden." Do we have the faith to answer the invitation? That's where it begins. Let me go see. I hear that this man Jesus, I hear that while He was in Jerusalem, He did some really great signs. There's even some talk that when He was at Cana the first time, you know, that He turned water into wine, but though only His disciples and the servants knew it for sure, but word very possibly got out, didn't it? It most certainly did when John wrote about it, I know. Okay. But you see, the man says, got to begin somewhere. Have to start somewhere. I hear that this man might help our son. I think I'll start there. Jesus said, come unto me. That's where our faith starts. That's where it begins. It's in our initial obedience of the gospel. When we trust him enough to come unto him, seeking the forgiveness of our sins, seeking the reconciliation with our God, seeking the peace between us and our Creator, at whom we've been at enmity with because of our rebellious sin. Seeking because we are burdened and we are carrying cares just like this father. The faith of a nobleman that not many noblemen had. So if in any way you're subject to the invitation of Jesus this morning, we encourage you to use this opportunity. Come as we stand and as we sing.